Today we're looking at how changes in reproductive technologies are affecting the debate about the ethics of abortion. James McCartney is a bioethicist and a Catholic theologian. He chairs the Department of Philosophy at Villanova University. He served on the ethics boards of hospitals and nursing homes. He's the ethics consultant for the Catholic East Health System and for the Franciscan Health Network. I asked him if he thinks that new reproductive technologies are affecting the abortion debate.
Yes, I do. I think, first of all, the technology of in vitro fertilization has made people aware that there can be a living organism outside the body, and we have the ultrasound imaging the fetus inside the body, and people are beginning to see that it's not just a clump of tissues. I mean, early on, it's certainly very small, but after a few weeks, you can actually see the fetal form, the human form taking shape, and I do think that has had a significant impact on people's perceptions about the debate. I also think that the morning after pill has, in some sense, medicalized and privatized termination decisions more than anybody would have anticipated.
So, you know, from the ethical perspective, how do you weigh those two issues that you're talking about, the privatization of abortion through the morning after pill, or RU 486, and reproductive technologies that show us how early life really begins to form?
My own feeling is that we have an independent but an individual but dependent life very early on, maybe not at fertilization as some claim, but certainly very early in the process. And I think that the imaging techniques have shown that much more clearly than anybody could in writing. However, I do think the RU 486, these issues are not going to become public in the same way that they were before, that this is going to be increasingly a very private decision between a woman and her physician. And, you know, while we can say that may be objectively immoral, we can't enter into, you know, all the subjective reasons that people might have to make that decision.
You've made the argument in an article that abortion is an inherently social decision and not a private decision.
Right. I said that because I argue that because all of us are involved in a web of relationships and responsibilities, and certainly that's true of women who are pregnant. They have relationships with spouses, with the child in some way. They have a relationship with other children. They have relationships with their jobs, which sometimes is the reason why they're choosing the termination decision. So, you know, to say that this is just strictly a private issue, I think strikes me as incoherent. Also, the court in the Planned Parenthood case indicated one of the reasons why it supported the Roe versus Wade, even though some of the individual members were against it, was precisely because of this social dimension that women, you know, were planning their lives around reproductive decisions. That's inherently a social reason for supporting Roe.
You are, among other things, the ethics consultant for the Catholic Health East Health System.
Right.
Do you consult on issues related to abortion, too?
I sure do. Yes, in fact, I just reviewed a policy last week in the Tampa area. One of the major hospitals there, St. Joseph's, which is part of Catholic Health East, has developed a new association with some of the other hospitals called BayCare Center, and we just hammered out a termination policy consistent with the principles of the Catholic tradition, which would be you can't directly terminate a pregnancy for any reason, but if the health of the mother is jeopardized and you are directly intending to save the life of the mother, you can use a medical intervention even if the fetus dies as a result.
Now, how did you arrive at that policy?
Well, the Catholic tradition really believes that it's that the fetus deserves protections, an ethical stance, that the fetus is a person and deserves ethical protection from the very beginning, and that, you know, Catholic hospitals won't directly terminate life for any reason whatsoever. They will allow for the indirect termination of life through the principle of double effect in order to save the life of the mother. So, for example, if the mother has a cancerous uterus, that uterus can be removed even though it has a fetus in it.
What has given you the most difficulty over the years in coming to ethical decisions about abortion?
The most, let me say, first of all, the most pain that I have about this whole decision is the lack of thought that sometimes seems to go into it in experiences that I've had talking with different people, that it just becomes an issue. The court says it's legal, therefore it must be ethical, and not a real working through of the issue. The most difficult ethical dimension, though, would be where it's a situation where a woman really is suffering, and there is legitimacy in terms of, you know, some of the concerns, and your heart has to go out to her and say, you know, this is a person who's really suffering, and trying to understand that, and then putting that in the context of, you know, a religious tradition that has a very strong position and will not allow for some flexibility there, and that can become painful at times.
What's your take now on the abortion debate? You know, abortion has been legal for 25 years, but it's never stopped being debated.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you would offer your critique of the debate, of both sides of the debate and how they talk about it.
I think that just in the last few years, there seems to be a willingness to listen more to the other side that wasn't there before. I also
a willingness on both sides.
I think on both sides, there's been a willingness to try to understand the other perspective, even if they don't agree with it. But I also think that it is not much of a front burner issue anymore, precisely because of some of the things we said earlier, RU486 and other things that are making this become much less public issue. Just in the last maybe 5 years ago, you had a lot of demonstrations in front of, you know, abortion centers and all. And you seem to have that less. I mean, there was, you know, of course, the outbreak of killings, which was terrible. To kill in the name of life is just, you know, a contradiction. But just in the last couple of years, we haven't seen a whole lot of that. And it seems to me that the rhetoric is dying down somewhat. But I do think there's more understanding. And I think also, as you pointed out, the imaging techniques and other technologies that we have, you know, educated people in a way that they weren't educated 25 years ago about what a fetus looks like, what developmental stages it goes through. And I think, both sides of the debate have been benefited by this.
Can you think of an example where you have changed your mind on something because of something you've learned from the other side of the debate?
In specifically the abortion debate.
Yes.
I think that, I don't know, I feel like I've always, you know, been empathetic to the other side of the debate. I've never been, you know, sympathetic to some of the concerns of women on this issue. I guess what, you know, one thing maybe I've changed through my research on this is, you know, believing that life began right at conception, to a notion that life now begins when the neural tube is formed, that possibility. Also, I think the trying to justify some termination of pregnancy very early on, as a result of, you know, hearing some of the tragedies that some women have to experience. I think I've always been fairly sensitive to the other side.
My guest is Catholic theologian and bioethicist James McCartney. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Catholic theologian and bioethicist James McCartney. Do you think there's a fundamental difference between an early abortion and a later abortion, or do you think ethically it's the same no matter when it's performed? And especially now that we have pills that can do an abortion very early on, we have pregnancy testing technology that can detect a pregnancy much earlier than it could be detected before.
Right.
So the possibilities of very early abortions.
Yeah. Of course, the issue is, you know, when is this an individual apart from the mother? And no one has a, you know, certain answer on that. Even the Catholic Church, which people think has, doesn't say absolutely. It says it's likely that it happens at fertilization, but it really doesn't say that it's, you know, absolutely. So, taking that into context, my own argument, which I've written up and published in a book that I issued about 10 years ago, is that I believe that individuation, becoming of a new person, takes place fairly early in the process, but not right at fertilization, maybe within 10 days or so, when the, what's called the neural streak forms, when it can be this person and no other, when you can't have identical twins forming, or when you can't have a fusion of two fertilized eggs to form a chimera. So when that possibility has ended, then I think it's an individual with protectable rights. Before then, I still think, because it's, you know, headed toward human life, it deserves respect. However, in those situations, I think it would be possible, even within the Catholic tradition someday, although probably not in the near future, to look at the issue, say, of rape, and say that, you know, you could have a termination at that time, because you're not killing a person, that you are, you know, tragically ending the life, but it's a very difficult situation, and, you know, you have to weigh both sides of it. And I do think there can be some movement there. Many people, of course, in the Catholic tradition would disagree with me on that, but I do think in that first 10 or 12 day period there is some room to reflect. And of course that would be the situation with RU-438.
If you could kind of rewrite the debate about abortion now, what would you want to hear people debating about? What form would you like to hear the debate take?
If I were rewriting, I would first of all say that Roe probably should not have made this a constitutional issue. I think it has been a real mistake in American jurisprudence, and even in that situation, the court has been inconsistent, because in Bowers versus Hardwick, they said that people do not have the right to the privacy of sex if they're same-sex partners. So, you know, there's a lot of inconsistency in the court, and I think they should not have gotten into this whole area of personal privacy, which is really not privacy in its traditional sense, but personal freedom of decision. And I like to see it in terms of the social good, the common good, and possibly allowing states to make laws and legislation and let the people decide some of these issues, rather than, you know, saying this is a constitutional given, a constitutional right. So I think that has set the debate on a non-winnable situation in the terms of the debate, because short of a constitutional amendment now, the courts are not going to change the decision on Roe v. Wade.
Let me raise an issue that Art Kaplan raised earlier.
Okay.
And that is, you know, now we have the technology to transfer a kidney from one person to another, bone marrow from one person to another. But if a person needs bone marrow or needs a kidney, it is not your absolute responsibility to give it to them. You have a choice whether you will give some of your life to support their life.
Mm-hmm.
So in that question of what is a woman's responsibility to support a fetus, do you think that the kind of kidney bone marrow analogy holds up?
To a certain extent. I mean, I think that there, if there ever became a situation where we had an artificial womb that could support life, and a woman didn't want to carry a pregnancy to term, and they could remove the fetus and still keep it alive, sure. I mean, I wouldn't have any problem with that at all. That's not, strictly speaking, abortion. You know, it's only abortion if you're intending to kill the fetus. If we had that technology, yes. But since we don't, the intention to abort is also an implicit intention to kill at this particular time. And as far as does one have a responsibility to provide life to another person, I think one of the issues is how close are you to that person? If it's a sibling, or if it's a spouse, or if it's a child, you probably have more of a responsibility, you know, to provide that than you do if you were just a casual acquaintance. And so, you know, the relationship between a mother and fetus is a pretty close one.
How do you see your role in the abortion debate as a Catholic moral theologian?
I see it as one of trying to get both sides to talk to one another, to listen, to develop a deeper respect for life, knowing that there's probably never going to be, in a pluralistic society, full agreement on this issue, but to see that, you know, this issue is connected to a lot of others that there's a lot of debate about, for example, capital punishment and euthanasia and all the other life issues. And I think that if I can get people thinking about the importance of the dignity of human life, respect for life, you know, maybe we can find common cause and develop a theory of a seamless garment that says that all life is sacred.
How much do you allow science to shape your views as a Catholic theologian?
Very much. I have a master's degree in biology and teach philosophy of biology, and I'm fairly knowledgeable about contemporary science.
And you don't see them as being at odds, your religion and science. You use science to inform your religious ethical views.
They can be at odds, but they need not be.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can, faith is faith and science is science, and one can still believe in contemporary science, even evolution, and still, be a person of faith and still believe that the purposes of love are unfolding in the world, and, to kill is still against the purposes of love, even if there isn't a master design at the beginning, which contemporary biology would reject.
Well, James McCartney, I want to thank you very much.
Okay.
James McCartney is a Catholic theologian and bioethicist. He chairs the philosophy department at Villanova University. Earlier, we discussed the new reproductive technologies and the ethics of abortion with bioethicist Art Kaplan.